216, a link to the past randomizer podcast. I am your host, Fear Agent. Today on the show, we've got Josh Bittner. A really long, fun conversation with Josh. I'm excited for you to hear it. It's a really good one, so stick around for that. We are in the finals of the 216 podcast, Cross Keys Co-op Tournament. We've got Allison and Goomba versus Humbug and Telethar. Allison and Goomba were able to make the finals by beating Zelga and Dr. Marty. It was a really fun best of three series. Both those teams went 5-1. Humbug and Telethar were able to get past Schulzer and Teto, who were the only undefeated team going into the brackets. They took that series to three games and won that last race. It was a close one. It was a really, really fun one. So we have our finals. Game number one is going to be March 2nd at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. And it's already got a channel. It's over on Speed Gaming. So all the brackets have been restreamed. Huge shout outs to the people that have tracked and calmed. Really appreciate people volunteering for this small little tournament. And it's been fun to watch. So you can check those VODs out over on Speed Gaming. I think all of them, except for one, has been on the main Speed Gaming channel. And one game was on Speed Gaming 2. And that was because they were happening simultaneously. So check those out. They've been a lot of fun. Tournament's been a lot of fun. And it's going to be cool to crown a champion. Speaking of champions, we have our winner from the Zelda Music Draft a few weeks ago. I was supposed to announce it last week, and I forgot. Shireen's been bugging me to post the results. We have our winner. 30% of the vote goes to Leoria. So GG's. It was a close race between her and Shireen. I'll read a couple of the responses for Leo's picks. Someone said Leo had six great picks. Shireen had three of the best and three just okay ones. Wally took the worst Mulgara first. What the heck? So that was a vote for Leoria. Another one was, I appreciate the justifications for the Boss Clear and Melma Mart selections, but they were two of the weaker songs in the draft. However, in my opinion, Leo's other four are the best top four by a pretty wide margin. Her 1, 2, 3, 5 picks might be all in the top 10 songs. Overall, certainly top 15, including the overall number one pick at pick 6. Someone else voted for Leoria saying Malmo Mart. I wonder who that vote was. First three picks are some of my favorites in the entire franchise from Leo. And someone else said she picked the best music. So it was close, but it was a lot of fun. The real winners were everyone because I thought that draft was fun. I thought the draft was really entertaining, and it was fun listening to all that awesome Zelda music. So maybe we'll run that one back. It was a lot of fun. So congratulations to Leoria for winning the Zelda Music Draft. Also, again, want to shout out Leoria for editing the show for me. Does an excellent job. And continue to show the support for Leo in the 216 Pod Discord. She's making the show happen. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get to the interview. Josh is an interesting cat. Like, we had a couple of, let's not call them rough, but just some interactions that were not necessarily the most friendly. I can be off-putting at times, and I can and come off kind of harsh and direct, curt. And so I didn't know if there was going to be a time where Josh and I talked. But I want to take advantage of this opportunity and try to, I don't want to say mend fences, but just get to know Josh. I think that's a problem, right? It's because we have limited interactions with people, usually on Discord or maybe in a couple of streams, that you can kind of put people in a certain category of like, this is somebody that I either like or don't like, right? And I don't think it's as black and white as that. I think people are complicated. People are deep. And when you get to know someone, it changes things. And I think getting to know Josh changed things. I really enjoyed talking to Josh, and I was really glad to have him on the show. So let's get to it. Here's Josh Bittner. So let me ask you this. Looking at you, because, you know, we met at Speed Gaming Live.
Yeah.
Never would have guessed you, like, as a metalhead.
Oh. Yeah, I grew up in the early 2000s. Like, my teen years, the transformative years, are going to be what we would affectionately call the worst decade in music for quite some time, the early 2000s, mid-2000s. So, man, did I love me some butt rock, new metal.
Because I was a teenager in the late 90s. So, like, right when, like, Korn and, like, Limp Bizkit hit. And I was always into it, but I was ashamed of it at the same time. It's like,
yeah,
you know, you're growing up and you're trying to figure out, like, what it is that you like. And I don't know, there was something corny about new metal to me. But I did grow up, like, in my car, chocolate starfish and a hot dog flavored water
was just so worn out because of how much I played it.
Yeah, right at the peak of Limp Bizkit, right before they fell apart.
right.
Yeah, but imagine that, but except it's 3 days graced.
Okay. So you went a little bit later, right? Yeah, okay.
You're like, oh no.
Yeah.
As I'm just going to, like, I'm sure Aaron is going to hear this, Mr. Aaron Snerd. I'm just going to be like ragging on Canadian butt rock.
But you like it, right? Like, you play the guitar, you know, before we started, you talked about you playing guitar. Is that what you're playing? Are you doing, you know, metal or is it something else?
It's all over. So, I mean, I guess we kind of get into like a bit of my music career, as it does kind of intertwine with gaming here and there and everywhere. But yeah, I mean, I do play some hard rock, some metal. When I was more of a professional, I will play anything you pay me to play.
Did you actually get paid to play the guitar?
A little bit. Nice. Not enough to keep doing it.
Sure. I mean, it's tough. Like, there's so much competition in it for sure.
I mean, my understanding, if I'm remembering the lore right, I mean, you're a comic writer.
Artist.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like any creative profession. I'm sure you can relate. At least in America, we don't really value art and paying people for making art.
Right.
So it's like the fact that you're able to do it as a living is like, you know, hats off. Like, that's amazing, because like that's a really hard thing. I really made a good go of it, especially like. It's just basically in the 2010s when I really made a serious go of it. It was just the wrong decade for anything guitar oriented music.
Right. I mean, rock is dead, in my opinion. Like, it's so hard to find good modern rock. You know, I grew up in the 90s in the heart of grunge. You know, I'm from the Seattle area.
Right. Oh, what a glorious time.
Right. If you want hardcore rock, I mean, the alternative stuff was so big over here. Yeah. Obviously, you can go back into the 70s, the 60s, the 70s and stuff. There's, you know, massive times for guitar music. But it feels like after like 2010, like guitar driven rock is just kind of gone the way of the dodo. I know there are people still play guitars and stuff.
It's more of a niche, because I remember, like, especially when I was like hard into my auditioning days, Imagine Dragons was really breaking through hard. So the entire industry in Los Angeles, where I live, is, it's like typical suits. Like, you know, in the 90s when Nirvana broke, every fat cat in the studios, you know, they wanted the next Nirvana. So that's why we got post grunge and stuff like that. So it's like, where's our next Kurt? Like, especially like by the early 2000s, after it's been 10 years after Kurt passed, it's like we are really scrambling to try to find the next Kurt. So at that time it was, we're trying to find the next Imagine Dragons, or like put a band together with some Nepo baby and he'll be the front man, or he or she will be the front man for this Imagine Dragons ripoff. But
okay. So when you said you made a go of it, you were trying to do what? Do studio musician, or were you trying to do
studio and live?
Okay. Yeah.
In Los Angeles, there's kind of an odd, in like a whole scene of like musicians, like, they'll play in bands and, you know, you're trying to play a lot so that you can be seen and either get recruited into a good band, like a big band or a touring band. Session work helps you get paid. I know some people in my life that kind of transition more to session work, but it's hard. I mean, even the ones that sort of make it, I mean, I can tell you in my actual adult job now, where it is boring and staring at spreadsheets all day, I probably make quadruple the money they make per hour, and I have like insurance and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's always that trade-off though, right? Because again, I have a job that's the same thing, where it's like I make a consistent amount of money, I get paid regularly, I have insurance, I have a 401k and all that stuff, but I'm not drawing comics, right? Like, so I'm not necessarily doing the thing that I fully love. And it's like, where's the trade-off, or where's the, how do you reconcile one with the other? Like, does the security of having a better paying job overcome the missing, you know, playing the guitar?
Right. That's like my buddy. Well, not buddy, my old teacher in Los Angeles. He's a graphic artist as well. So he draws, he's basically the graphic artist for anything with the company Strymon for guitar pedals. So all of the boxes, all of the art that's on the pedals. So, I mean, he gets to do some drawing and some like art, but it's all in service of a product. You know, it's not fully creative. I mean, it's sure, it activates the creative juices.
It's not the same though, right? Like, I get it, because I am a graphic designer. Like, I get to do, I work with Photoshop. I do art, but it's not my art. Right? It's not the same thing.
You can put it on like your resume as like, ooh wee, look at this art I did. You know, like hire me, please.
Yeah.
But it's not like I drew this and like this is my story.
Exactly. Exactly. Did you grow up in LA?
No. So the lore with me is I grew up in Connecticut and then I kind of like bounced around a bit. Mainly I went to college in Pennsylvania, then moved back to Connecticut after I graduated college in Pennsylvania because I graduated college in 2009. And the irony of trying to get a job in 2009
right.
was very hard. But eventually, you know, I moved to Los Angeles in 2012 and I attended a kind of a ripoff school to get my foot in the door some in Los Angeles called Musicians Institute.
Mm.
Very expensive, probably not worth it, but I had a good experience. And yeah. I mean, I learned so much on guitar and vocals in my time there because I basically became a singer whole cloth through that music school, like just being taught by good singers. So I went from being really bad at singing to being pretty darn good. And, you know, not only auditioning on guitar or bass, but, you know, on vocals as well.
Mm.
And that could be like from like country to rock to heavy metal, because I can like growl and stuff, too.
Nice. Nice. So you grew up in Connecticut. Did you go to L.A. just specifically go to that school?
Yeah, that was the start. And then, you know, hopefully make your connections as you have to do. And then hopefully somebody likes you and then. You know, you get hired for stuff and then you start piecing together a career. And I mean, I did some cool stuff. You know, I have signed more NDAs for bands that maybe performed for 6 months and then disappeared and than you could ever count.
Yeah. I mean, that's the story of musicians and bands, right? Like for every one that hits, a thousand. Exactly. That don't
10,000, 100,000. There's millions come and go in LA, you know. And I mean, I know some people that made it. I mean, I know the current guitar player for Demi Lovato and the current bassist for Olivia Rodrigo.
Oh, wow. That's
cool. And then, you know, the drummer of In This Moment for the metalheads out there. I went to school with Kent. He's a phenomenal drummer and stuff like that. So, I mean, there's people that do make it. You know, you just got to be one of the lucky ones, not only in terms of talent, but just being in the right place, the right time. Right. The image that they're looking for.
Yeah.
And I mean, I definitely had some cool stuff happen. I mean, you know, like I even got to shake Randy Jackson's hand, you know, American Idol fame and all that. You know, mm-hmm. He was in charge of one of the auditions for one of those Nepo Baby bands in L.A. I eventually saw the guitar. I knew the guitar player I lost out to on that gig. But I mean, they were on Good Morning America one time for a single, and then the band broke up 6 months later. And I mean, that's a success story in the industry, and you're still looking for work within a year.
Right. I mean, gosh, music's so different nowadays too, because again, I grew up with CDs, tapes actually was the one, cassette tapes were first.
And then, I remember cassette tapes.
Yeah. And then CDs. And now, I mean, do people still buy CDs? Do people even buy music? Cause like I have an Apple Music subscription, right? Like, I just listen to whatever I want, whenever I want, without having to pay, which sucks for artists and it sucks for musicians and stuff.
Oh, I could give you plenty of lovely hot takes on how I feel about streaming as an independent artist that, you know, streaming definitely played a part in me not making any money. But I mean, I recognize it's an amazing deal for music and like, it didn't happen out of nowhere. There was a vacuum, right? Like you can remember in the 90s for every post grunge CD that you bought or, you know, like what I did, you know, with my crappy music too, like there's two amazing songs on the record and then like 10 or 11 crap ones. And they're still going to charge you $15 retail before a sale. And like, and you know, consumers are going to be like, that's bullshit. Like, so of course there was going to be piracy for that. And then the industry was just way too slow to realize. I mean, by the time iTunes came out in 2005, it was way too late. People were used to not paying for music anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the industry had recognized that the golden days of charging $16 for two songs was over, you know, they could have pivoted to charging $1 a song quite easily. And then we wouldn't have had the piracy epidemic that we have, I feel like.
Right. If you beat Napster to the punch, the problem was Napster beat the record industry to the punch. So then all of a sudden everything's free. And it's like, once it's free, how do you put the the genie back in the bottle, right? Like,
yeah,
I have all my music for free. Why would I pay?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I mean, if you have like the advice, I always say like, well, what do we do for like bands these days? And I'm like, obviously I don't have the money to buy every single record on the planet, but like, I would say if there's like an artist that's not playing in a football stadium, I mean, maybe like think about your 3 to 5 favorite bands. If they don't play in stadiums, like purchase their music at least.
Yeah.
You know, just a few. Like, obviously, I don't think Drake or Taylor Swift really need your album purchase money anymore.
Right. I think there's a shift, right? Because of the newer generation that's growing up on Twitch and YouTube, and people are willing to give money to, you know, the smaller streamers or are people that are mid-size, even mid-size. It's like, it's so much easier for me to pay $5 a month for someone's Twitch.
Yeah, it's the patron model.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So I think music is sort of going to be adopting that, or has it in some ways with like SoundCloud. And
yeah, a lot of independent bands, like for instance, there is a comedy metal band called Psycho Stick, and you know, they have a phenomenal Patreon. I mean, I don't sub to it, but I'm just aware of it. So it's just like any sort of way, like an independent band that's not on a record label makes money. Like that's, it's all patron models or like merch sales and things like that.
Yeah, for sure.
Basically, being an independent artist, you're not making music to sell. You're using music to get people into the door to buy your t-shirts. Exactly. And stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So you grew up in Connecticut, you said?
Mm-hmm.
And were you playing video games as a young kid, too? As you were trying to rock out on the guitar, were you?
The guitar came way later. Okay. If we're going to go back to the beginning, I'd say the first ever gaming experience, and maybe this will tickle a couple of people's memories here, it was on some sort of like IBM Tandy computer that my dad owned, and it would run on DOS, but it had some sort of like list-based program launcher. It was like maybe 16 colors. And this is like talking like 5 or 6 years old, and like my dad had like the original Jack Nicklaus golf and PGA Tour golf on that.
Okay. Nice.
And if you look those up on YouTube, I mean, they look pretty rudimentary. Like, I mean, I think those games ended up getting ported over to the NES.
Okay.
But I remember that sort of stuff very young like that. But aside from that, that's the earliest stuff. Most of my early gaming stuff would be through my neighbors, because I have an older sister. And naturally, she had friends, and they had the SNES. The friend had a SNES, and my sister wanted one, but my parents wouldn't let her get a SNES because my parents probably correctly assumed that I would get addicted to video games. So here's an alternate history. Alternate history. My sister could have been a game.
Yeah. Your sister got punished because you would probably like it more than even she did.
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, because I'm like 3 years younger than my sister. And so I guess there's an alternate history where my sister became a huge gamer, but because of that, she never really got into video games.
Okay.
Because it was Mario Kart that she really liked, the original OG Mario Kart. But my friends had the SNES next door, and we only really played sports games. We had Super Soccer and Brett Hull Hockey for the SNES, and I do remember the younger of my two friends next door. They had a Link to the Past, but he was even younger than me, and he would just die to the rats and escape, and that's about all I remember from the Link to the Past.
Sure.
I even remember that when I got into Rando, like, when you're extremely bad at the game, because, you know, you haven't really played it much, you know, and you only start with 3 hearts, and that's good for 5 hits.
Right.
So if you're not really in control of the character very much, you know, you just get hit by those stupid rats running around and then you die.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just, we'd play Super Soccer, Brett Hull Hockey. They might have had a couple of other SNES games, but I mean, the one I really remember was when they got the N64 in 96 at Christmas, because they got the Wayne Gretzky's 3D Hockey, which is a really silly arcade hockey game. But the one that really clicked was Star Fox 64.
Yeah.
When that dropped right around the summer of next year, and they got that because one of their birthdays was in July, and still wasn't allowed to own a video game console. So my parents played a little trick on me. At that time, we had finally gotten a Windows PC. We were way late to getting a Windows computer. And they did a little trick. They did the We Have Star Fox at Home trick. And that was the Fury 3 game for the PC with the Sidewinder joystick, which maybe there might be one person out there that's like, holy shit, Fury 3, I remember that game.
Yeah.
Where it's like you control a spaceship and you use the joystick to fly around 360 and then you just, you know, you're like shooting up the targets or whatever.
So what was it that stopped your parents or prevented you from getting a console? Was it they just thought
video games bad? It was the 90s. Eventually they caved. I guess maybe they caved on somewhat because my right around like 97, 98 or so, they got me a Game Boy Pocket, still black and white Game Boy Pocket.
Okay.
With like, they gave me FIFA 97 on it. So that kind of dates when I got it. I did eventually get like Pokemon Red for it. And also they had like for the Game Boy an NHL 96 copy, which barely ran. It was kind of funny to think back on that.
What do you think broke the camel's back? Like what was it about the Game Boy? You think
probably because it's on the go. So if they're like my mom's going somewhere. So my sister and I were homeschooled at the time. Okay. And so I guess if like my mom had to go somewhere, run an errand, like give the annoying 9-year-old a Game Boy and shut him up, you know, sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. And it's got batteries, so it's like can't last as long.
And it's a Game Boy Pocket. So the battery, two double A's would last 20 hours. Okay. Unlike, you know, like a 3DS, which will last like about 3.5. I mean, it's basically almost like it's like the forerunner to iPad babies of today.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's just funny to me that they held out until the Game Boy, and it's just like, all right, here you go.
I didn't even know, because it was a complete surprise. I didn't ask for it. It was just given to me for my birthday, and I was just like over the moon, because, you know, I never owned a console before besides the family computer, which had like, you know, the Fury 3, and we did get NHL 97 for it. So it was kind of cool because, you know, it was better than the PlayStation version when my friends got their PlayStation 1.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really play the PlayStation much as kids. Like, they had Final Fantasy VII. I remember them dying repeatedly to Genova Death on just disc 2, probably because they had no fire resistance, and like that boss would just have like all the fire attacks, so they would just kept getting wiped.
I've actually never played it.
You know, I mean, with the remake, it's kind of cool, and it is kind of neat to go back. I mean, obviously the graphics are never going to hold up,
right?
I would say maybe like, I don't really know too much about it, but this game has been modded to hell and back. So you could probably download like an updated texture pack that makes things look less blocky. But it was just like, that was a good one.
So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Young Josh has no consoles. So you got to go to your friends. It sounds like you're really into sports and sports games as well. What were you doing as a kid when you weren't playing video games? Because obviously,
every time we were kicked out of the house.
yeah. Like, you can't be at your friend's house all of the time, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, I was highly regimented as a kid. There was like, basically there was three things in my life, like really until I went to college. Like, I was really hard into, and this was forced on me at the age of 7, but I was a violinist. So practicing a shitload of violin.
Okay.
And honestly, being one of the best players in my town at the time, as it kind of turned out, as it was an interesting quirk. We were allowed to participate in the elementary, middle and high school orchestras. I guess like there was an agreement made and we were allowed to participate in those. So, I mean, eventually I was the concert master for the middle school and high school orchestras, despite not technically attending the high school. So a lot of violin.
Did you like playing the violin?
Yes, not really. I think what I wanted to do when I was like 7 was I wanted to learn to play drums. And my mom was like, absolutely not. She said, I think you have to take 1 year of violin, then maybe I'll let you learn the drums then. And well, probably I just forgot and never came to collect on that promise because, you know, I'm a dumbass kid. You can tell a kid anything and like they'll forget like a year later.
Yeah.
But it was violin, but I play a lot of like town league, baseball, soccer, and also got into hockey. So I was doing a lot of sports. I mean, I would almost have like sports practices almost every single evening.
Wow. So your parents kept you busy then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely had plenty of time to game. You know, I can think to like, especially as we get into my teen years, My parents never replaced that first Windows computer from 1997 until 2003. So I remember NHL 2000 was the first year they came out with a franchise mode and you could simulate up to 10 seasons and, like, you know, do roster building and all that stuff, you know, do the drafting. It was pretty cool. I remember doing that for like years. So I had time to game. But yeah, I was also playing, you know, I was a goalie for soccer and hockey, like, until I like wrecked my leg and then I was like a forward. But
so lots of sports, lots of violin,
and then the gaming when I can.
Yeah, sneak the games in when you can.
I remember, so this is a little tragic story. I lost my Game Boy Pocket on a flight because it was with my toiletries, like in a backpack. Like, we were doing like one of our vacations and we were flying, and like I think like the soap exploded and it soaked the Game Boy Pocket and it died. But I remember with the Game Boy Color, because they bought that to replace that, they're like, oh, that sucks, kid, you know, let's give you this for your birthday like a month later, sort of thing. And yeah, I remember like the lights, all the attachments. Like, if you kind of like, I know, like on Scott the Waz YouTube videos, like he'll go through like old catalogs of like for like Nintendo products for like Christmases of the past. And it's just like core memories unlocked, because it's like you have a magnifier, a light, all this stuff.
Yeah.
That you can hook up to your, because I mean, they didn't have backlit screens. So if, say, when I got the GBA, I wanted to play Golden Sun after bedtime, I had my little light.
Yeah, that's right. I remember the first Game Boy Advance didn't have the backlights with them.
No, it wasn't until the SP. I still have my GBA. It doesn't work, so I'd have to take it to like my retro shop to see if they could fix it if I really wanted to do that.
So when you look back at your time growing up, I don't know what your relationship is like with your parents, but do you feel like you were held back or are even forced to do stuff that you didn't like? You wish, you know, everyone has regrets or whatever, and you are, you know, you can only control what you can control, but like, do you look back with like fond memories of playing the violin and all the different sports and stuff?
Here and there with the violin, you know, it's like I made some of my friends that way, like through the orchestra and stuff like that. Like, that was really one of my main ways of socializing, because, you know, homeschooled, you're just at your house.
Right.
Yeah, that definitely built up some resentment as I was like becoming a teenager. And that's really where the guitar saved me, because like I picked it up. My first guitar was given to me by that same neighbor's parents at Christmas. Like, she used to be a guitar player, the mom. And, you know, I'm just saying it vaguely, so I'm not like doxing anybody, by the way. But like, she gave me an acoustic that she wasn't using. But I really, really, when I was like 15, like going into sophomore year of high school, that's when I really started going hard on the guitar, because I was definitely in a rough place with my parents, especially my mom, about the homeschooling. And that was when my sister had went to college. So
you're really by yourself then, right?
Any sort of like resentments that my mom like sort of had, you know, about, you know, raising teenagers, what have you, was really just, oh, you're the only one. So it was taken out on me, and that definitely led to some sore feelings, and took really until I went away to college to really repair. And the guitar, when you're 16 and you hear I Hate Everything About You by Three Days Grace, it's just like, yes, I connect to this on a personal level. Or like Linkin Park's you know, One Step Closer. Sure. Everything You Say to Me takes me one step closer to the edge.
And I'm about to break. So what was your parents' reaction to you playing the guitar? Because they were kind of opposed to you playing the drums at this point. You're a teenager. Were they a little bit cooler with, did it replace the violin?
No, I was still playing violin well into college.
Okay.
It just became like, I really wanted to learn guitar because my sister's high school boyfriend played guitar, and I just like worshiped the ground he walked on. I mean, he ended up kind of being a bit of a dickbag later on, but... Like, while it was good, you know, it's like, oh man, he plays the guitar, he's so cool, and, you know, he's like 4 years older than me, so when you're 13, you're looking up to like some 17 or 18 year olds, you're just like, oh man, they're the coolest person ever, I want to be just like them, I want to play guitar and, you know, rock out.
Yeah, for sure.
But I picked it up, you know, and I took to it really quickly. That's when I also started getting lessons, was starting into sophomore year. And well, I mean, this is a little bit hard for me to talk about in the nowadays. My guitar teacher was Ollie Herbert from All That Remains. Unfortunately, he passed in 2018, and I kind of don't really want to get into that more than saying that, because there is a litigious party involved and the state of Connecticut is still investigating that death. So,
oh wow,
I would have to tell you my opinions off stream. I do not want to get sued.
Sure.
Yeah, he was my teacher before the band broke big, because where I lived in Connecticut, I lived outside of Hartford, and that's like 45 minutes from the Massachusetts border where the big metalcore scene was just like building in. So like bands like Killswitch Engage, All That Remains, like his band, Shadows Fall, there's a whole bunch of bands that just like broke from the same town in Massachusetts.
That's crazy. I had no idea that all those bands were from that area.
Yeah, I mean, because it's just like Western Massachusetts, that's right over the border from Connecticut. So I mean, you would have these guys like teaching at like guitar stores, you know, in Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire. It's doesn't take very long to get to another state in New England, I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to Jersey. I went to school in Jersey. So,
oh, okay.
All that area is just, it's all so compacted together. But yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping with like my band in college that, you know, was in Pennsylvania. I mean, you'll laugh. It was Christian rock, but we were hoping to like play, you know, in PA, New Jersey, Virginia, because it was all like, everything was like a 2-hour drive, right? You know, like you can hit Philadelphia, you can hit Atlantic City, you can hit DC relatively easily, stuff like that.
You say I would laugh, but, and I haven't really ever talked about this on the show, but I grew up in a very like strict religious home. And so I wasn't allowed to listen to secular music as a kid.
That's why I was homeschooled, was my parents did it for religious reasons.
Yeah. And so I grew up with Christian rock.
Yeah, we were trying to be Skillet in college. I remember that very, very well. I mean, I know Skillet is now like...
they're a little bit more mainstream, yeah.
Yeah, they're more mainstream now, but I mean, the singer is now just like cuckoo. I mean, he went like anti-vax and stuff like that. So it's just like, you're like, ooh, oh no.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's... gosh, we could, I'm sure, talk forever about all that stuff, but...
that's part of the reason why I ended up leaving Christian rock, was like, just like there are folks that actually believe, and then there are just some that are using the religion for their own ends.
Well, that's, I mean, CCM is just a whole, there's a whole, that could go into a whole other podcast about the business aspect of Christian rock.
Yeah. Oh man, I lived through it. There's a lovely book, especially like as kind of where I'm at in my life and my journey, is like there was a really fun book that was released. It's kind of like a coming of age novel that was set in the early 2000s called like Hell Is a World Without You by, I believe, like Jason Kirk or something like that. I'd have to look it up, but it's just like everything about like early 2000s youth group culture. It's just like I experienced it.
Yeah, for sure. So you get to college and you said that was in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I attended what is now known as Messiah University.
Okay.
It was college back then, but you know, they've since blown up and became bigger. I was looking to, and this just like shows, I was like, I loved music so much, I just wanted to be on the radio so I could be a DJ. But I kind of realized 1 year in, I was like, wait a minute, radio is dying.
Yeah.
You know, like we were having an attempt at like satellite radio, but I mean, we were talking about everyone's listening tastes earlier. It's like, talk about like no one's buying CDs. Like, people were turning off the radio in 2005.
Yeah, for sure. What about gaming as you got into college? Did you start gaming more?
Yes. Like the wheels really started rolling there. So I did have some experience with like the GameCube in high school. Like we'd play Smash or NHL Hits 2002, which is kind of continuing the legacy of Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey. It's just like this cartoon violence hockey game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, one of my friends in college introduced me to Fire Emblem Path of Radiance. And now, like, you know, I love Final Fantasy and I was playing that when I discovered emulating in high school, you know, to emulate the SNES and play FF4 and like all of Chrono Trigger and stuff like that. But like Fire Emblem Path of Radiance and then going to the GBA games was just like earth shattering for me.
Was it your first kind of experience with, besides the emulation stuff, like that sort of genre?
Yeah, I never played a strategy RPG before. And I mean, I would say even to this day, like Path of Radiance is one of the better Fire Emblems to be your first one. It has a good tutorial. It does have a bit of classic difficulty, but it's like a fair difficulty. I'd say by the end of the game, like It definitely will challenge you and test you, like any good game tests you on your what did you learn? Like what I've understood and read about game design, like since those days, you know, it's like the final boss of your game should be like your final test of, okay, what did you learn throughout the course of this game in terms of mechanics? You know, how much better you can execute versus when you started playing this game and stuff like that. And I would say like the end game of Fire Emblem Path of Radiance really does a great job of that. And that's why I would say it's a tough but fair start.
Sure.
But like, yeah, like so like those Fire Emblem games. And I remember also on like another because I was living in the dorms in college, like another one had an OG Xbox with Dynasty Warriors on it. And I freaking loved that game. I did end up getting a console though, like when I was rewinding a bit, like this also kind of dates me back to being like a young teenager in the early 2000s. I had a paper route, and that's when in 2001 I got the N64 for myself with my paper route money.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was one of those gold Toys R Us N64s, and yes, I'm aware if I had still had the box alone would be worth like $300.
Wow.
Because it was like super rare.
Yeah, I don't even know if I've ever seen a gold.
It's just like a painted gold console.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I know they had a. They ended up coming out with a whole range of colors. Yeah. Like I ended up getting like a purple one.
Yeah, I still have a purple and blue N64 controller to have the kit of four. I mainly bought it because it, you know, it came with two controllers. I was like, ooh, wee, that means, you know, that's a free pack and controller. Nice, you know, you're a kid.
Yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah.
It's kind of like more recent, and like in 2017, I finally wanted to get a 3DS, and it was right after Christmas, and all of them were sold out because like 2016, they discounted the 3DS to being dirt cheap. And the 3DS that I ended up getting was the very, very banana yellow Pikachu one that is now apparently worth a lot.
Oh, wow.
I bought it because that's like, I wanted a freaking 3DS, and that was the only one I could pre-order at GameStop.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I got into college, and I do remember playing a lot of Mario Tennis 64. That was a lot of fun. Like we would have like little tournaments on the floor and stuff like that.
Sure.
And although it's kind of funny, the gaming kind of comes full circle. My parents fell into the Nintendo Wii craze.
Oh, yeah. I felt like the Wii was perfect for an older generation, because like I remember when we first got the regular Nintendo. Yeah. And my dad was using the controller, and he'd flick the controller up to like try to make Mario move. Yeah. And jump, you know what I mean? And so, you know, it's funny, like 20 years later or whenever, however long it was when the Wii came out, when you could actually start doing that stuff with Wii remote.
Yeah, my parents loved like the Wii bowling. My dad, yeah. You know, like kind of circling back to my dad's, like he would play the PC golf games on the computer, and like getting like Tiger Woods golf for the Wii was just like such a joy.
Yeah, I bet.
I do remember one sidebar about like my dad's love of PC golf games, because I would play with him, you know, just like as a dad son thing. And, you know, it was kind of fun to play. It's just like it's a 3-click golf, kind of like Mario Kart, Mario Golf, where you kind of you tap A to start the swing, tap A again to get to the top of the swing or however much power you want, and then tap A a third time for like the accuracy.
Yeah.
I remember in 1997, we had dial-up internet. You know, this is still It was 1999. We had dial-up internet. Tiger Woods 99 demo dropped. And my dad wanted to download it, and it was a whopping 28 megabytes to download a 3-hole demo. We started it at like 9:30 p.m. And he said it was done downloading when he was leaving for work the next morning. We left the phone line blocked all night to download a 28 megabyte demo download. And it's just like, wow, the graphics.
Yeah. I'm trying to put all the pieces together here.
Yeah, I know it's a little scattershot.
No. You big into sports games, right? Like it feels like that was the majority of what you're playing growing up, and even as you got older into college, still into sports games. And then you start dipping your toe into other genres
here and there. I mean, I loved RPGs as soon as I discovered them. You know, like I remember like being 10 years old and my friends, you know, they got the Final Fantasy VII, you know, like enamored by chocobos,
right?
Things like that. But then you know, I think I really remember it like freshman year of high school, like truly discovering JRPGs, because, you know, I had a friend, an orchestra buddy friend who was given a laptop by his school because he was in the International Baccalaureate program, the IB program. I don't know. I think that's still a thing, but it was the smart kid, like wing of the school, if you will. Mm-hmm. But they were given laptops, and like he had a very early version of SNES 9X, and he was like playing Final Fantasy 2, which we now know is 4 on it. I'm just like, whoa, what is this? And then like he was showing me Chrono Trigger and stuff like that. I remember, or reading about, I don't remember. It's like, I have like all of the ROMs from like redactedwebsite.net, you know, sure. Where it's just like, you're downloading. I like all of my ROMs for like that are on my FX pack for Rando are like 20 years old when I downloaded them, like my Chrono Trigger, my what have you.
Sure.
And I remember getting the cartridges for Pokemon games. Like, I remember in 2000, I got the dual pack for Pokemon Gold and Silver. I got Golden Sun 1 and 2 for the GBA, stuff like that.
So was it a lot of RPGs and sports? Those are kind of like the
that was really genres. It.
Yeah.
I'm going to anger a lot of people and say that I've never really played a 3D Zelda. Like, I tried playing Ocarina of Time, and this is where, like, I have a lot of holes in my gaming because I am just so bad at what we now know as the modern, like, two thumbsticks, like one to look, one to actually move. Like, I just could never sort that out for the life of me. So like FPS games, I couldn't really play. Adventure games like The Witcher or what have you, you know, I can't really play. I'm just like, very frustrating.
I get it. I mean, you'll grow up with it. You don't have a nostalgia for it. You don't really ever get accustomed to it. I get it. It makes sense.
Yeah. I tried playing Halo 2, like with all the LAN parties in college, but I mean, I would just be terrible. So it was just like, I've tried off and on for 20 years to get used to that, like dual thumbstick or like WASD and mouse.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And I just couldn't really do it. So like JRPGs are great because, you know, they're easier in that sense to like move around. And then the sports games, I don't know, it's just because, you know, it's a top down camera, right? So
yeah, sure. And I don't know, there's something that when you grow up with it, right, it almost becomes second nature as you kind of evolve as the games evolve.
Yeah. And I mean, I loved hockey so much, you know, I mean, I still do to a sense, but I mean, the Sabres being terrible for over a decade has kind of killed most of it.
sure.
It's just like, and if you're a sports fan of anything, it's kind of, I mean, I used to be into baseball too, although, you know, I was a cursed Yankees fan, thanks to my dad. So, but it was kind of hard for me to watch Yankees games once I moved to LA because, like, oh, cool, the game is like in the middle of the afternoon when I'm unavailable.
Yeah, totally. It's
like anything on the East Coast, like everything, you know, we all know what's up, trying to watch football at 10 in the morning or something like that. And it's just like, right. This sucks. Yeah. I actually have to remember to wake up to set my fantasy football lineup. Yeah. Oh no.
So you go to school in Philadelphia, you go back to Connecticut, right, for a little while. Then you decide to give the guitar thing a go in LA.
Yeah. And I promptly blew out my elbow. So this is something that I kind of mentioned in Fred's to Rando. I partially tore my triceps right, like at the start of the whole, like, trying to make a thing on the guitar. So I can still play, but
how did you do that?
Just playing guitar. It just snapped in the middle of a guitar class that I was in. And yeah, I had to go to the hospital and everything. I was in a sling for like a month as it healed. And
were you just like rocking out like Jack Black, so I know, like just going nuts?
It's just it's a repetitive strain injury. I mean, like it's kind of like, I mean, because like all my hobbies are like using a computer mouse or, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, if you're not like doing stretches and stuff like that to like make sure that you're staying healthy, you know, or you're ignoring the signs of like inflammation and stuff like that. I mean, I still live with it to this day.
Yeah. Does that require surgery or did?
No, I didn't need surgery. I just healed up. But I mean, I was weak for a long time. It was actually something I documented in 2022, right at the start of when I did the casual boots tournament for the first year. I remember like, I think the first photo I ever pictured was me in physical therapy, like finally, you know, with a big boy job and insurance and stuff like that. I'm like, sweet, I can get like physical therapy on this. I mean, I'm going to be living with what I've got forever, but like actually, you know, they have you pick up a hammer and twist it and stuff like that, just trying to regain some strength so that you can like function in life and stuff like that. Cause yeah, I mean, it's a pain that I got to live with every day. I just manage it and it's better now. So you don't have to like worry. I remember this is like some psychotic stuff, like around in 2022, in order to play Rando, I'd be taking ibuprofen, putting a CBD cream on the arms, and using a massage gun in order to play.
Wow. So how soon into moving into LA does this happen? Is it pretty early on?
Yeah. So that's why when I graduated from the music school, I switched to voice. So I'm like, well, I'm a pretty good guitar player. And I realized also, I'm like, I'm good enough where I could get a gig just at my current skill level. Sure, it would have been awesome to like woodshed 8 hours a day like you need to for that program, and you would just become this like god of a guitar player. Just like anything, it'd be like, imagine if you took like graphic design courses like intensely for 2 years, and like it's just like, if you can dedicate 8 to 12 hours a day to like getting good at a particular craft, like you will get freakishly good at it.
right.
And like that was like the thing case for me on voice. I mean, I had done some singing a little bit before I went to that music school, but I had never been like a lead singer before. Like I did harmonies before that because I have kind of an inborn skill called absolute pitch. So I can hear the notes of like music and things like that, just without any sort of reference, or sing back anything without a reference.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare, like half genetic and half taught sort of skill. More common in Asian countries where there's a phonetic language to speak, with like mm-hmm. different pitches for different meanings. But like the overall odds are like somewhere between 1 in 10,000 and 1 in 20,000. But yeah, I'd never been a lead singer before attending that school. And I mean, yeah, you spend 2 years singing the crap out of your voice, you'll get a lot better.
Sure. Well, so let me ask you this, your mental fortitude, because you go to, you know, all the way across the country to play the guitar.
Yeah.
And then you get injured and you can't play the guitar. Like mentally, what's that like? And do you feel like you're kind of set up to be able to handle that kind of stuff?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's just like my mental set state's kind of like one of those. It's like, well, what are you going to do? It's like you either, when a problem hits your way, it's like you can either get through it and get around it and over it, or you just let it like take you out. I mean, I could have packed my bags and moved back to Connecticut.
Sure.
But I didn't want to do that, partially because, I mean, everyone like craps on LA and it's warranted, fair. But I mean, there's a lot of positives to living in Southern California. I mean, today aside, to date this recording, I mean, it is raining today, but, you know, 250 days of blue skies does wonders for one's mental health.
Sure.
I mean, yeah, it gets like ungodly hot in the summer sometimes, but like I do like living here and stuff like that. And now I'm married, so it's, and her family's here, so it's kind of hard to pack the bags.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like I can either drop out of the school or I can continue and learn voice, where frankly, I needed a lot more work anyway. So it was just like, I was just hoping to be more of a shredder back in those days and like play, like, cause I used to be able to play stuff by like Dragon Force and the like, just like super technical music. But like, I mean, now my overall interests have changed, where it's just like, I don't mind guitar solos, but sometimes they get to be a bit overbearing.
Sure, for sure.
So it's, talk about like adopting the grunge mindset, where there's not really a lot of guitar solos. Right.
Yeah. So when do you get introduced to like the idea of speedrunning or watching streams, even Twitch?
There's two parts to this. In 2011 or so, I remember the concept of Twitch being a thing because I used to play a browser-based RPG called Kingdom of Loathing. Okay. And the lead designer, and this is like an RPG with like stick figures as like the art.
Sure, it's a browser-based RPG.
Yeah, right? It was like intentionally low quality like graphics. No, but he would eventually, and I played that from like 2007 into like 2013 or 14, but like by 2013 he would stream randomly once in a while, like just drawing like the art for the game, and then like capturing, so he would do it like on a Wacom tablet and then code it into the game off screen, so where we couldn't see it, because, you know, you don't want to see the coding so that any bad people can do bad stuff. But like, so that was like the first part of like Twitch. And then a friend's sister got into streaming in like 2014. I would remember watching her play a little bit of like playing like the original Destiny. Mm-hmm. And then I completely forgot about Twitch for many years, until really like with Rando. I discovered Rando thanks to the YouTube algorithm. I somehow got fed stuff for the awesome games done quick. And then that somehow led the algorithm to morphing into, oh, so you like this randomized A Link to the Past game. And, you know, being the little content goblin, I was like, yes, yes, I do like it. And I remember watching that it must have been like a 2018 tournament. And what really my memory was, there was a runner called Pika Pals who was using the Pikachu sprite. And they went deep in that tournament because I was watching. It was a tournament where you could select a mode. I don't remember which tournament that was, where it's like, I guess there was like a vote and a veto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like fall of 2018, I want to say.
It might have been that one, because that sounds right, because my former bass player in my, I guess you could call it my band, the one that I really ran, he got into rando at the time. His handle was Matsudeno. I don't know if anyone would remember him or not, but this would have been in 2018. I just remember him posting to Twitter a couple of times about rando, and I thought it was cool. So I guess probably the YouTube app on the iPhone, which naturally all of the apps on the phones have everyone's data. Right. So it's like, oh, clearly you were talking about ALTTPR randomizer on Twitter. So here's some YouTube content. And it was, must've been that tournament. And I remember Pika Pals going deep until he ran into this runner at the time called ALG Andy.
Yeah. Did you say you know Pika Pals?
No, I just saw him. I just saw them running. Because I like the sprite. I was like, whoa, that's the Pikachu sprite. And they're still in the tournament. And they're like, they're really deep in it.
Yeah.
And like, I think they specifically got bounced by it. I'm like, ah, that ALG Andy, who's just Andy now.
Yeah. So what was it about rando? Because you obviously didn't grow up playing Link to the Past.
It was just interesting. Like, I just thought I was just enamored by it. Just like the randomizer part of it. I had played A Link to the Past on the GBA, so I played that in, 2002, and I played it only really one time through, and I was like, oh, this is a great game, and then I just moved on to probably playing some other JRPG, like Breath of Fire 1 and 2 on it.
Sure.
It was the randomizer, and then it started, after, like, I kind of ran out of tournaments, or it started feeding me, and that was in 2018, and then it kind of just stopped feeding me that kind of content. Mm-hmm. Until early 2020, and it started giving me Andy streams. I guess the algorithm was like thinking, he liked this like a year and a half ago. Let's see if we can feed him some content from somebody posting their gameplay on from Twitch to YouTube, and that was Andy.
Yeah.
So I was just like watching him play, and it never really occurred to me for like 4 months to like actually go over to twitch.tv/Andy and watch.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I did, and that was a ladder match, early ladder match, and it was Andy versus Chelsea X Lynn. Talk about another guest that's been on 216.
Yeah.
I think I found my way over to her channel, and just like, that was a really welcoming community for like newcomers getting into rando. And by this time I was like all in. I'm like, this is so cool, like the randomization and all that. Cause you know, it's like, what are we gonna get this time? Are we gonna get another ped seed? You know, just being like typical Twitch chat dipshit.
Well, that's the thing about chat, is it's when you're not playing or when you're new to it or when you don't see it a lot, that the idea of like ped is like, oh, that seems so spicy. When start playing the game, you realize how silly all that stuff is.
But yeah, and then you just, as you're playing it and you're like, have a better sense of routing, you're like, you can start to sense, like, especially like in an open 7-7 or something like that, you just kind of realize like, oh, I see where this is going. This might be ped. And then you just kind of start, you can make a gamble towards playing to ped or something like that. And you're just like, I called my shot.
Okay. So that made you pick up a controller then and decide to try to give a shot?
I watched Chelsea playing for like a couple of months, and then like some of her like kind of like associated friendos, like, I mean, I eventually like saw like Willard playing, and then Lock Cole Live was playing, you know, so I'd hang out in their chats. But yeah, I do remember like by July of 2020, and we were hard into the pandemic, and it's just like, why don't I give this a shot? You know, like, I haven't played A Link to the Past in 20 years, and I've never played it on SNES and stuff like that. So I was like, why don't we give this a shot? And I mean, I have my VOD hidden, and it took me 7 hours and 4 minutes to beat the game. Sure. With like an hour on getting knocked off by Ganon, like over and over again.
Ganon is tough, man. It is tough. Like, we take for granted how hard the game is if you've never played it. Like, it is tough. It takes practice.
The thing is, like, just by being in this community, and like, I'll even say this, like, even if you think you suck at this game in terms of like the community average or something like that, I still assure you, you're probably in the top 1% of all gamers at this game.
Right.
Because like, who's put hundreds of hours into this game? Who's played this darn game like
right
over 100 times? Even like, only like super freaks do that for other video games. Like, you know, right. Here we are just like cranking like 3 seeds a week or whatever, you know? And like,
so do you remember your first race?
Yes, and that was the irony of it all. My first opponent was none other than Chelsea X Lin.
Nice. Was it on the ladder?
Yeah, it was on the ladder, and okay. I managed to keep it under an hour by losing, because I lost by 59 minutes and 30 seconds.
Sure, but again, you're racing against someone who has so much more experience than you, right?
Like, and I mean, this was Chelsea at the peak of her powers.
Right, and you're just, and it's your first race.
Yeah, and so I get stomped, and like, some of the community had realized pretty early on that I was matched up against her, so it was kind of funny. But yeah, I played at a pretty poor level well into 2021. I remember signing up for the Challenge Cup and then dropping, and that's probably my first interactions with Lumago, was like saying, hey, I think I need to drop. I'm probably just gonna get my ass kicked and I'm not gonna have any fun. And that kind of pissed him off. Fortunately, they had a replacement because one of the other admins forgot to sign up, so they were able to switch me out.
Was this before the tournament had started?
Yeah, it was before it started. I was even assigned to a group. Like, I was assigned to a group that would have had Ben Teasy before he got called up to the main 2021. And some other runners that I was just like, I have no shot. I'm just going to die. And I just decided, like, I was going to drop. So that pissed him off.
But why drop? Why not take the losses? Why not try to play the game and you know, lose and learn?
Yeah, that's my great shame in Rando, is doing that.
I don't think you have to have shame. I'm just curious more
of the mindset of that. It was just like, probably just being a coward.
Okay.
But what Lumaga did, though, is saying, you know, I strongly encourage you to join the mentor tournament that will be announcing in a couple of months. So. And that's where, realistically, you know, we started our first gasp of improvement. You know, I had some good mentors in there, including, you know, like Laggy was a huge one, and he stuck with me actually after the tournament. But also one of my mentors for a couple of the weeks, and this was solely done based on the mentor sheet and seeing that he was in Pacific time zone, it was none other than Gamachu.
Okay.
Freaking Gamachu. Just like,
nice.
Just pick one of the top runners in the community out of a hat, basically.
So he just kind of put himself out there, and you got to.
Yeah, I mean, anyone, okay. If you're on the mentor list with GMP, you know, anyone that's a mentee can like say, hey, can you mentor me? And then if they can, you just say, yeah.
How was he as a mentor?
He was great. I mean, he was wise enough to like a good mentor will realize like the skill level of where their mentee is at. And then, you know, he'll basically kind of just take that into account for like suggesting what play you should do and stuff like that. I definitely learned a lot about routing from Gamma, and still do, because, you know, he and I talk randomly here, there and everywhere about, you know, routing decisions. He's done a couple of VOD reviews for me, although I do make sure to pick up shields just for him.
Does he tell you how to leave Turtle Rock after finding the flippers and go to Hobo to get the ice rod? Did he ever teach you how to do that?
No, I think he wasn't too much into that bit of luck sacking yet.
Okay. Just checking.
But he was definitely teaching strong routing instincts, and definitely, I mean, he definitely pushed me towards like that sphere of routing. And like for instance, in the one of the matches that he mentored for me, we had two, we were one from go mode, and we had two choices. We could either go back to Pendant Eastern, or we could go forward into Ice Palace. And I was like, well, I'll do what you do. You know, let's move forward. Let's go to Ice Palace. And that was the correct answer. My opponent went to Eastern Palace first, and that's why they lost and I won. So stuff like that, you know, it's like, that's aside from like your, I didn't, you know, I mean, there's some execution that I was taught, especially like casually, you know, on voice calls or stuff like that. But I mean, I would say like the biggest things I learned from that mentor tournament was like routing.
Sure.
Because like what I do, and this is one of the joys of why I love the randomizer, is that You could be not as skilled as someone, but if you can outroute them, you still have a shot.
Mm-hmm. It's what makes it great, right? That's kind of why we play this game a little bit. Yeah.
Obviously, as you get better execution, the amount of times you have to outroute somebody on decisions gets fewer and fewer. Like, so if you can, it goes from needing to make three correct decisions to one correct decision over your opponent. You know, that's where I'm at currently, you know, and I'm working with execution gods like Bidey and Flip Heel about trying to get better execution as at the game. Yeah. So like that mentor tournament was huge. And that's kind of leads into the league season four or five, 2021. And that's actually where we had our first ever interaction because my teammate was getting banned.
Your teammate got banned. Oh, was that your
Worldwide Wimby? Yes.
Oh yeah.
So I think probably in our DM history, probably like the first thing is like, oh God, am I getting banned too?
Yeah, that's right. I totally forgot about Worldwide Wimby. So this is your second or third tournament. You skipped out on the Challenge Cup.
Yeah, we went to league.
Do GMP and then go to league, and then you get your teammate gets banned
like, in the first week. Surprise. He was trying. I feel bad in a way because like Wimpy literally never came back to Rando after that in a way. Mm-hmm. But I mean, he was just trying to like calm me down but he definitely did break the rules where, you know, you're not supposed to look at the other streams and stuff like that, where that's why he got banned for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And he also got like a 1 month ban from the old racing council at the time. But I mean, it was just like, I was so green. Like I couldn't even do a Master Sword Ganon. So I was like freaking out about trying to do that. But like I had formed that team with someone else from that mentor class. I'm trying to remember what his former username at the time was. He eventually went to Super Rando Brothers and he doesn't play anymore.
Okay.
And then we had High Ruler replace him. High Ruler still plays on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we got our teeth kicked in that season.
Well, I mean, again, you're going from not playing in any tournaments other than GMP where you get, mentor, right? You have a literal mentor through it to your first tournament.
Yeah, and I did decently well in that mentor tournament. I ended up in the second tier bracket as the number one seed. There was a clump of four runners ranked 13th through 17th, and just based on like times or whatever, I was put to 17th. And then, you know, I won like a round or two in that. But you know, once you're like out of the general population and, you know, out of that little cocoon of like similarly skilled runners, and then you go into even just the open league, that was quite eye-opening. I lost every single race I played.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the open, you think open league means easy, or you would assume the open league means easy. That's not the case at all, right? There's only a limited amount of spots in the Invitational, so there's a lot of players that could or should maybe be in the Invitational. There's just no room, and so you get a lot of really strong runners in the open. So let me ask you this. What was your and your teammate's reaction when your teammate gets banned, and how do you handle that? And was there thought of like, oh, maybe we just call it a day?
No, Super Rando Brothers and I wanted to continue. So we just went back to the free agent list, and, you know, High Ruler seemed like the best choice from what was available. And we went with High Ruler, and we just kind of kept going. I mean, it was definitely a bit shocking. Like as soon as we learned that he was in trouble, we were like, oh crap, you know, but you know, we got through the season. So that was in 2021, and you know, it was definitely like, wow, very challenging. And then it definitely forced me to go back to the lab a little bit in over the next like 4 or 5 months, where I would work with Laggy a bit on some execution stuff, you know, like in advance of like Challenge Cup 2022.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I really feel like pre-mentor tournament 2021, like I just like call that being a newbie and not like having learned much. I mean, I got a little bit better as like 2021 rolled along towards the mentor tournament. But I mean, in my first two seasons of ladder, I went 2-20 and then like 9-19. So it's just like, you know, until I got to the mentor tournament, I was just like routinely getting my teeth kicked in.
Sure. But you were enjoying it enough to keep going, right?
Yeah, that's, I guess it was just like the random, it's just like what I enjoy also about the randomizer is, you know, now that I'm an adult with an adult job, and well, I've been an adult for quite some time in terms of having like an actual job, yeah, you know, not just trying to play guitar all day long or something like that, or singing all day long. Like, you know, like you think about like the limited time that you got in terms of gaming. It's like JRPGs, especially these days, like, you know, your Persona 5s, and you go on to howlongtobeat.com and you're like seeing, yeah, this JRPG that you think looks really cool. Oh, cool. To like do like the main story and like extra content. It's like 140 hours. And you're just like,
yeah,
I can either like chip away at this game and play like three JRPGs a year, or I can boot up a rando seed and I'm done, you know, in like 2 hours or less. Like, that's awesome. Sure. I love that about this.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's been a good experience. Like, you know, and going into 2022, you know, I got lucky and I had a fun group in 2022. It was kind of like going full circle. I had Lumaga and Temp in my Challenge Cup group.
Nice. So you went to qualify for the main tournament, right?
Yeah. And that just, you know, stunk up the joint. Sure. Yeah. It's just like, it's very clear that I was nowhere near it. And, you know, I did advance out of that group with a 4-2. Lumaga, I think, took the group. I'm trying to remember how that group went, but like, you know, I got to the round of 64 and I played a German runner, Ascend, who I think is now, as of this season ending in the league, is graduating to the top league. I think they made it. I'm trying to remember, but I mean, you know, I think they're now in invitational, or they might be, or they were in the playoffs of league this year. They were good. They stomped me. And, you know, it was kind of funny. It was like, it gave me the bloodlust. I wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, what if I should make my own tournament. Like, how hard could it possibly be?
Is it how Kaz Boots started? Is, yep. You just kind of wanted to do your own.
The
own
red thing? Mist. And, yeah. You know, fortunately, and this is where I shout out like Mr. Aaron Snerd and Dr. Earworm. Aaron was the first to come aboard. We grew up in Chelsea's community together. Oh, okay. Right at the same time. And I've been chasing him ever since in terms of skill. He won that mentor tournament in 2021 and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Doc kind of like heard about it and then he wanted to join up. So like the three of us made the tournament. And you admined the league for quite some time. Like, so how hard could it be? Right.
Right.
And then you get behind the curtain. You're like, oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing comes from restreaming races. I feel like most tournaments are pretty easy to run. It's trying to broadcast, gosh, how many races are ran in a tournament with 100, exactly. 100 plus people. It's just like, it becomes a nightmare and a logistic nightmare, and trying to find volunteers and all that kind of stuff.
Because speed gaming got interested right away, because I mean, casual boots is a popular mode, and I didn't know, and this is like how wet behind the ears all three of us were at the time. Like, we didn't consider that a lot of people would be interested in playing a very popular mode.
Right.
Or, you know, that also speed gaming would be interested in broadcasting that because it's a popular mode.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like every person that's kind of like been bothered by the tournament in terms of like our admins, like we were learning by the seat of our flying by the seat of our pants and learning as we go. Still are, you know.
Is it safe to say that you're a pretty competitive person?
Yes, I definitely can run a bit hot.
Okay.
I mean, that just goes back to playing hockey growing up. You know, you get to be, you know, this is a really kind of a toxic attitude that we're trying to not have coaches say these days. Like, there are, but I remember like back in the day, you know, the coach trying to inspire you, like saying, there are players who love to win and there are players that hate to lose. And so I just hated losing so much, like growing up.
Sure.
And I would do like any, it's because, you know, they're trying to like, what would you do to win sort of thing? You know, you would do anything to win.
You're trying to inspire, but does it create an unhealthy look for competition, right? Like where,
yeah,
I get it. I mean, most people aren't going to be playing in the NHL or the NFL or professional, you know, where it really, really matters. And so can you have a healthy approach to competition
It's just like everyone thinks their special little boy or girl is going to be a professional athlete, you know, like, especially when you get into the elite programs like I was getting into when I was like a young teenager and stuff like that. But I mean, even the reality is for like these like developmental leagues, like you'll get like five players that'll play D1 collegiate sports, and then maybe one of them gets a cup of coffee in the big show.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, talking about like guitar playing or being an artist and stuff, it's like
you just got to be one of a million.
Yeah, totally. You have to have skill, you have to have talent, but you also have to have a lot of luck and things kind of go your right way.
Because like it's all like it's all scouting, and just like music and arts too. It's just you got to be scouted by the right person.
Yep.
You know, being like someone's got to believe in you and stuff like that. Yeah, very competitive. And I mean, I definitely run hot, and definitely that's, I would say, like if I don't, and I've, it's kind of fun. It's like I've kind of taken your advice like from previous podcasts, like you're feeling heated after a loss, like you know, maybe don't chat in the post game chat on the ladder or what have you. If you're just like blowing, your face is completely red and steam's coming out your ears, usually, like, of course, by the time the chatty part is closed, either by race time or the ladder auto closes, you know, like then I'm cooled off. But like right. If I'm like steaming because like, ah, man, I shouldn't lose this one, I should have won this one or what have you, you know, like I can be pretty hard on myself. But like, yeah, it's definitely like anything that, you know, and I'll own up to like personality flaws in myself about this sort of stuff. Like anything that like someone might dislike about me, it was like 10 times worse 10 years ago. So it's just like getting older and living a bit more, you know, some of the sharp edges get rounded off.
Sure, for sure. So do you feel like you have a healthy relationship with Rando and the community and where you're at in 2024?
Somewhat now. I mean, it's been up or down. I'll definitely own up, you know, in the great community meltdown last year, I stepped over the line in a few places and said some things I probably should not have said, definitely should not have said. And, you know, I have to own up to that. I feel like things are good-ish. You know, I'm still learning. You know, like I'm, shout outs to like Bidey and Flip Heel, like just teaching me. But I do want to get better. I don't feel like I'm at a place with my execution where I want it to be. I kind of, I feel like, I mean, I'm not going to try to go for the world record, but I feel like there's a level of execution that I want to get to, and I'm not there yet. Mm-hmm. And I do want to get there and still have fun with the game. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here.
Do you feel like you have a good balance, though, of enjoying the game as you're trying to improve?
Yes and no. Sometimes it's like it's hard to like regulate it sometimes because
you are competitive.
And like the other day, you know, I do a PB on the ladder for casual boots where I drop a 104 and I'm feeling like high as a kite. I'm like, oh hell yeah, I just stomped, you know, I rock and rolled. And then literally yesterday I'm doing a run of the vanilla preset because I got into the vanilla preset, you know, late last year after SGL, and, you know, then I stunk up the joint. Right. And I'm feeling really crappy, you know, and that was literally yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, it's definitely trying to learn to even it out, you know, with the community. I mean, that's what I enjoy about like adminning the Kaz Boots tournament. It's kind of cool to make a space for, especially last year, we had a lot more signups because we just let it be unlimited, and like there was a lot of new people trying it out, and it's just like, you know, I recognize that Cross Keys is the big hotshot tournament of the summer, and it's where a lot of people are going to go play, especially some of the top end talent. And but, you know, like we definitely get top runners in the casual boots tournament, but I do like it being a space also for like, you know, newer runners and stuff right. like that.
Yeah, because casual boots is a lot easier to jump into than Cross Keys, right? Like it's a way more friendly to new players mode.
Yeah, I did the Cross Keys mentor tournament, and I mean, I'm still struggling. I don't know if I have the brain for it.
Sure. Yeah, it's tough.
It's hard. It's yeah. So I mean, like the casual boots tournament, it's also a shorter mode. So like, knowing that I'm probably sub 90ing unless something horrible happens, like is also like, it's a governor on how much time I play, because I also noticed as being a stinky Cross Keys player, by about 3 hours, my dog starts getting upset and wants like a walk.
Sure.
She'll like start walking up to me and giving me the stare. I have my dog's a little Maltie Poo that I've probably posted all over the place, but like, and she's not like one of those chill dogs that's like, you know, just sits there and is like, yeah, I'm cool, I'm a dog. No, this dog's got like an attitude and personality and will like get up in your face. Very demanding and manipulative.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I like that space to like create for new people, especially if they're coming from the mentor tournament. I mean, I don't know what our plans are going to be this year for when to do it because of the whole league and main tournament shift.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going to be able to align, because the first 2 years we were aligning with the bracket phase of the mentor tournament. Just so it's like, okay, your mentors are gone. Like some of you are still in this tournament, but like most of them after 1 week are not, because of the nature of going from, you know, 64 to 32. So like, here's your first tournament against like, you know, the rest of the community here. I mean, unless they were like playing in Challenge Cup or something like that, but like, here's like, you can test what you learned.
Yep.
And, you know, and I'm still learning. I'm still learning to be a better admin. You know, Aaron is too. We're going to be making a post about this. Dr. Earworm is going to be stepping away as an admin. Mm-hmm. He told me this was a potential at SGL, but is confirmed, because the doctor in Dr. Earworm is no joke. He is doing his doctoral defense.
Yeah, he's definitely busy.
So it's just, and also he got engaged. So, you know, it's going to be looking into that sort of thing. There's just a lot of life stuff. And then, you know, just trying to be a good admin. You know, he said it's not in the cards. No ill will. And we've recruited Joubert from the French and German community. He worked his ass off last, you know, as just a mod. And what a good guy. Also likes guitar too, so that helps. Nice. But he'll be joining as an admin. And yeah, we'll make the official post on this later. But, cool. You know, Doc was instrumental for this tournament. Like, every insane idea that I had that didn't make it into the tournament, like, that was basically Doc being like, Josh, you're crazy. Josh, stop. No. Bad Josh.
Yeah, Doc's good people.
Yeah, I love Doc. I'm really going to miss him in the admin chat, where, you know, like in any admin chat, we're all, you know, talking our little talk.
Sure. So let me ask, this is the question that you know, I ask everyone. Tilt
question, baby.
Yeah, I mean, especially with your, you know, admittance to being getting heated while you play or when you lose, how do you handle tilt?
You know, I'll be a salty bastard for about like 20 minutes, you know, after a race. And, you know, I lost either. I mean, I feel like there's like a zone. I think it depends on the way I lost, right? If I lost because, you know, I didn't go to left side swamp, you know, like, what are you going to do? Some runners are more conservative and they're going to skip it. They're not going to skip it, whereas I will skip it gleefully almost every single time. Like,
right.
Those sort of losses, it's like, whatever, you know, like, that was like a choice I made. I had to live with it. This is at any skill level, especially when at a more moderate to top level, like, your margin for error just becomes zero with routing. So it's just like, well, you made the skip and they didn't, and you lost that way. It's like, I don't get too angry. I think I get more angry if I lose and I just blew it on execution.
Mm.
That's when I'm going to get heated. Sure. And especially because then that's when you lose by like 30 seconds or a minute. And right. You're just like, what? And then, you know, like sometimes if you're like extra salty and you're like, I don't want to sound like hockey, but like, you know, it's like with any runner, it's like, you can like, if you know you're going into a race against an opponent and you can feel sort of favored, but it's never going to shake out your way 100%, even if you feel favored. You know, and just getting that slap upside the head when you lose, like, that's always tilting too. But I mean, I'll be angry for like 15, 20 minutes and then I'll honestly forget about it. I mean, it's kind of like, it goes back to being a goalie in hockey where it's like, you get scored on, right? It's just like losing in Randy, you get scored on. But if you're going to dwell on getting scored on, you know, you're going to have
a bad, get scored on again.
Yeah. Right? The next one's going to go flying right by you before you can blink. And then like you're suddenly in a full down meltdown or you get yanked.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can be pissed off in the moment. I think that's valid. We're human. Most people don't like losing much, but I don't let it ruin my day. I'll put it that way. It's maybe sometimes my wife, when she gets home, like my gaming hours are pretty regimented. Like, shout out to my wife being, you know, she's not really into games, but like with our work schedules and stuff, I'm allowed to game most evenings. until a certain point. And sometimes, like, you know, when she gets home and I'm still a little bit long in the face, and she'll like, oh, did you lose? And I'm like, yeah, I lost.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like one of those things where it's just like, dang, you know, it's like, I don't let it ruin the rest of my evening, though. I usually shake it off with by like an hour tops or so. Like, it doesn't really stew for that long. I think that's important. Like, you're going to be upset if you lose, but
yeah,
you know, I do think it's important to have that balance, is like where it's like, yeah, you just can't let it ruin your day. It is just a game. We're not even getting paid for this, really, unless like you're a right. full-time streamer. Like, big ups if someone is.
Yeah.
Probably not a life I would really want either, because you're hoping right. for other people's generosity. I mean,
yeah,
that's a hard gig, and I respect the people that are able to pull it off full time.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I can't let it ruin my day. It's like, you know, there's always going to be more rando, and maybe the next one's going to go better for you. But it's definitely, you know, it can be a struggle at times. I will own up to being a bit of a sore loser at times, or being salty or heated, and, you know, apologies in advance. I'm trying to be better at it.
Sure. I think you mentioned it, being salty is okay. It's, do you take it out on that person, yeah. right?
Like, you don't want to blow off.
Or even yourself. Do you take it out on yourself too, where it's you're beating yeah. yourself too much? And if you can have a healthy relationship with it, where it's like, yeah, it's really fucking sucks that I lost, but, you know, I can get over it pretty quickly.
Because definitely, like, beating myself up, I've been very good at that through most of my life. I'm a little better now. I mean, I went to therapy in, like, 2021, and that really helped me get through some stuff like that. Definitely shout out therapy if you're in a first world country with actual healthcare, or if you have insurance that covers it.
Yeah.
Big ups to that. I'd also say, like, my other big shout out is, and this isn't, maybe this helps a little bit. This is a physical thing. Like, the other thing I always tell people is to get a sleep study, because if you don't know that you have sleep apnea, I got a CPAP machine a year ago, and that was also a life changer. And I think I'm also a little less miserable because of getting better sleep.
You know, what's funny about that is, yeah, I've had a CPAP machine for a good decade now or so. But when I used it, I didn't know how much I wasn't sleeping. I didn't know what sleep actually was until I got a sleep app machine. So
I was sold as soon as the results came back from the doctor, which were alarming, because they'll tell it in their nice little lovely doctor speech, like saying, so you have on an average of 12 events an hour, like in a nice gentle voice. And what that really means is, so 12 times an hour, you try to choke yourself to death.
Right.
Yeah. Why are you waking up really groggy and cranky every morning? I can't imagine.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that has also, like, those two things have also helped my mental state through the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Funny to think about that sort of thing. It can be just like generally just taking care of yourself. It's just like, I encourage everyone to take care of themselves, you know, like with the ways that you're able to do it, you know, just if you can take care of your health and be in a better spot than you were a year ago or 6 months ago, like, that's awesome. You know, I'm always going to support your journey and always trying to be a better person, whether it be in rando, at another skill, or life in general.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, thanks so much for coming and doing the show, man. I know you and I haven't always seen eye to eye, and I know that there's times where maybe butted heads and stuff, but.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely one of those things. It's funny, you know, yeah, it was kind of cool, like, getting to be able to chat like this, because, like, yeah, I mean, we had our, it's like, talk about, like, things past. I mean, like, we definitely butted heads over the Specky clip and stuff like that. And sure. I have to admit, I didn't handle that very well.
Well, regardless, like, whether you handled it well or you didn't, it's safe to say that we didn't see eye to eye on different things, or have had maybe not the best interactions. But I feel like getting a chance to just, you know, sit here for the last hour and a half and just chat and kind of get to know, it's been a lot really of fun. Glad. So
thank you so much for reaching out. Like, this is really huge. Like, this means a lot. Like, I was definitely, you know, I was a little surprised, but, you know, like, it's really cool to chat. And, you know, it's like, you get to, it's like, here's the, like, the thing, like, with, like, here's where I can butt heads with a lot of people. I know, like, my sense of humor relies on a bit of a deadpan and also in the realm of absurd. Like, I will make an intentionally absurd statement because it's ridiculous and that's funny. and not everyone finds that funny. And I mean, I've definitely leaned back on some of my shit posting and stuff like that, you know, like trying to tamp it down some, you know, and sometimes it like sneaks out, you know, I mean, like that's just like a sense of humor that's a little bit offbeat, you know, and definitely does not translate to text online. But, you know, being able to chat like this, you know, we were able to have some good yucks over, you know, talking about terrible butt rock from the early 2000s and stuff like that, or laughing about, you know, growing up like in youth group. Big relate to that. You know, it's like it's always, I do try to find common ground with everyone. And I mean, I'm not the best at it sometimes, but I try. And you know what? I think that's the best for everyone, is just make your best effort.
Once again, want to thank Josh for coming on the show. Didn't really know much about Josh, so it was really good to learn his backstory and just to hear like what makes him tick. And yeah, it was really fun, enjoyable conversation. Could relate to Josh on a lot of different things. So huge shout outs to him for coming on the show. Really appreciated that. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed that one. I thought it was a really good conversation. Next up, going to have Pichu on the show. Pichu is one of the members of the French community. Real strong, up-and-coming racer. She was one win away from making the top four with her co-op Crosskeys team. Came down to the last week. It's been fun watching her play. Like, you've seen like a lot of improvement over the last year or so. And I'm really interested in getting to know who she is and in her story. And I think it'll be a fun one. So come back next week for that. 216pod.com has the links that you need. Link to the Discord is over there. Come hang out as we talk about whatever's going on in the community. You can hear me complain a little bit about Boulder's Gate 3. Not really complaining. Mostly my mistake. I'm doing solo runs. I was up to level 9, almost to level 10, and accidentally set off a nuke. Don't know what I was thinking. I was thinking it was just a barrel, but I knew it was more than just a barrel of explosives, and I blew everything up, including myself, and ended my run surprisingly. I was in a really good position to head into Act 3 in a really, really good spot, and I did something so dumb. But I restarted my solo run, and I found that I can get to level 5 on no long rests and in about 5.5 hours. So that's pretty cool. People just chat about stuff over at the 216 Discord, so come hang out with us. It's a lot of fun. That's going to do it. Really appreciate everyone listening. Come back next week for Pichu. See you then.